Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So as the temperature drops eventually and we head into the holiday season, the news that local food bank shelves are bare, thanks primarily to a drop in emergency federal food aid, seems particularly sad, especially in light of the fact that President Bush is requesting an additional $46 billion in supplemental funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan over the next year, bringing the total cost so far to about $600 billion. Last week, the Food Bank for New York City released a report that found that more New Yorkers are relying on emergency food aid as supplies are dwindling. I'm joined now by Anya Duggan, the Vice President of Government Relations, Policy and Research at the Food Bank. Welcome to WNYC, Ms. Duggan. Hello.
Hi, how are you? And thank you.
Good. Thank you. This report, first of all, follows up on a 2004 report and found a 24% increase in food pantry and soup kitchen visits. How many people does that represent?
What it basically means is that the number has gone from 1 million people coming to the programs to 1.3 million currently coming to the soup kitchens and food pantries.
That's just in the five boroughs?
That's just in the five boroughs of New York. The Food Bank for New York City has jurisdiction for the five boroughs.
So one out of every eight New Yorkers, if we have 8 million people in the city, that many are actually getting food from soup kitchens and food pantries?
Right. I mean, what we're seeing is that it's a lot of people who are having a hard time making ends meet. And we're actually seeing the number of people feeling the pinch increasing. And, you know, by that, I mean, we're seeing more working people, people working full time, people at higher levels of, poverty, and people who, you know, you wouldn't traditionally consider them to be poor, but now they're feeling the pinch and they're turning to soup kitchens and food pantries for a little bit of extra help.
Like who? What's the profile of some of those people or groups of those people?
Well, you know, one of the things we noticed was that people who are working full-time are starting to come in droves. You know, the last time around, we had less than one-fifth of the people who were coming working, and this time around, it's over one-fifth of people. And there's been a 73% increase in the number of full-time workers who are coming to the programs. So that's a big concern to us because, of course, they're coming at a time when we have the biggest shortage of food that we've experienced in the last few years. The other increase that we're seeing is that there are more people who are now depending on food stamps and emergency food together. And that's largely driven by the fact that the food stamp benefit runs out very early in the month. Just to give you an idea, you know, with some numbers, 24% of the people who come to soup kitchens and food pantries and who are on food stamps run out of their benefit after 1 week into the month. And by the time the three-week mark rolls around, 84% of them have run out of the benefit. So those numbers really tell you why they need to depend on both programs at the same time.
Anya Duggan from the Food Bank for New York City, my guest on WNYC. We can take phone calls on this. If you have used a soup kitchen or a food pantry in the last year or two, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Is there a shortage? Are you having more trouble finding food there? Under what circumstances have you turned to these services? And if you are a volunteer or a worker at one of these food bank frontline places, a soup kitchen or a food pantry, give us a call too and tell us what you're seeing out there. Even as there has been economic growth that the mayor and others love to boast about, there has also been this documented increase in the use of food pantries and soup kitchens in New York in this decade. 212-433-WNYC. Call and tell others who may not be in this world why this is going on, why this is going on for you, why this is going on for the people you serve, and if you're feeling more pressure on the supply side from federal policy. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Anya, walk us through the federally funded side of emergency food aid. Where does the federal government come into this?
Well, there's a number of different government sources for emergency food. On the federal side, it's a program that we all call TFAP, and what it basically refers to is the Emergency Food Assistance Program. And it's funded by and administered by USDA. And the way it works is that food banks all around the country use surplus commodities, and there's also an entitlement component of the program. So it's funded by USDA, and the commodities are then supplied to the soup kitchens and food pantries, so they in turn can supply them to people in need. What we've seen in the past few years is a shortfall in the bonus commodity coming through the program. And also the entitlement side of the program is flat funded. So you can imagine anything that's flat funded means that you have a shortage because it's not keeping up with the cost of food and transportation, et cetera.
And who decides this? Is it Congress? Is it the executive branch?
Well, it's the way that it's all determined is through the Farm Bill, because the TFAP program, as well as the food stamp program, are both governed by the Farm Bill. And so the one glimmer of hope we all have at this point is that Farm Bill 2007 can actually give us a way out of the problem, or can begin to show us a way out of the problem, because funding could be increased for the TFAP program as well as for the food stamp program in order to give people more of the relief that they need. And it is vital that support be given to both programs together, because if the food stamp benefit lasted longer for people, they might be less reliant on emergency food. And by the same token, of course, when people come for emergency food, there should be something, you know, to put in the bag for them or to put on the tray for them. And at this point, people are getting neither a sufficient benefit through food stamps, and they're also not getting the food when they come to the emergency food programs.
And what exactly did you document in this new report released last week? I see that you had some researchers at Cornell helping you crunch the numbers on the change in federal emergency food aid. What has changed?
Well, as I say, there's been a shortfall in the food that's coming through to the food banks. So that literally translates as empty shelves at food pantries and soup kitchens. The other thing that we do with this report is try to give New Yorkers a real picture of what the hunger situation is in the city. And we look at, you know, who is coming to the emergency food programs, what the issues are for the emergency food programs and the providers who work in those programs, and then what some of the solutions are, and who in New York is accessing services. And just to give you sort of a very quick overview, you know, we often talk about poverty in this country and sort of using the poverty level as a gauge of whether or not people are in hardship. Well, this report looks at percentages of people who access services at a variety of poverty levels. And one alarming finding is that 64% of people at the 200% of poverty level are accessing some form of food assistance. And 200% of poverty, just, I mean, I imagine that there are a lot of people who mightn't be able to translate that into numbers. It's basically, you know, a family of three would be on about $32,000 a year. So it's not a lot of money, and I think it really speaks to when we talk about 100% of poverty or people being below poverty, it's not really an accurate gauge of what's going on in the city.
Santos in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, Santos.
A pleasure. I run a food pantry in Jersey City. I take care of about 500 families a month. The USDA program is a joke. If you get anything, you get dried cherries, dried figs. There's very little, if any, protein in it. The only thing that's saving us here is the fact that Governor Corzine has put a line item into his budget, the very first time that's ever been done in the state of Jersey, of New Jersey, where he says there will be food for the poor.
Now, that's so interesting, because the governor was just here last week talking about this S-CHIP debate in Washington on the Children's Health Program, where if the president gets exactly what he's asking for, about 10,000 children in New Jersey would lose their federally subsidized health insurance. And the governor says he's putting a line item to make up that whole shortfall, which would be $80 million if it goes through exactly as the president wants. And so it sounds like this is another example where the governor is willing to fill that gap in this particular case in New Jersey.
He puts his money where his mouth is. I'm really glad we have him.
Santos, give me a profile of who these 500 families are who you serve. Can you? Are there
sure.
certain demographics or groups that you can describe?
Demographic, you don't mean racially, you mean
anyway.
Economically?
Anyway.
Okay, anyway. We have the senior who makes $631 a month on Social Security. Those seniors get $12 a month in food stamps. And a lot of them don't even go for it until you start telling them, look, that's 6 pounds of ground beef, please get it. rely on us. We have people who are working, home health aides that come into us. People, I mean, I've had a police officer come into me who just came out of the academy, who has two kids.
And we know in New York, Police Commissioner Kelly was here last week saying his biggest frustration in his entire tenure as police commissioner is that rookie cops make $25,000 a year, which, as you were saying, Anya, that would be below the poverty line for a family of three. And so that's just an example. Let's take another call. Bram in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bram.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time call.
Thank you.
I'm a volunteer for the Mount Kisco Interfaith Food Pantry. I started there 3 years ago. I do it through my church. The food patch supplies a lot of the food for us. We do food drives at our churches and synagogues, et cetera. I've watched a growth of probably about 50 people coming through, say, 3 years ago, too. That's more like upwards of 120 to 130 people coming through, and that doesn't include the children, so we're serving families of 300 to 500. The food patch does a terrific job, but there just isn't enough food to go around sometimes. Sometimes Yonkers gets more of the distribution. Sometimes.
Are you feeling a cutback in the last few years, as is apparently documented in this report?
Yeah, not only that, but it's on so many levels. I mean, we're up in Mount Kisco where that policeman was indicted for the local immigrant who was murdered.
The racial incident, yeah.
You see a lot of the Mitchell Llama. They're saying that that's going to go away. I'm seeing seniors come up. And, I mean, it's really it's hard because the numbers are increasing and the food is getting less.
Bram, I have to leave it there. Sorry to rush you for time, but I have a few more callers I want to get to, and we're almost out of time. Anya from the Food Bank for New York City, I noticed that your report talked about the shortage of volunteer workers. We had two, and I have others who are waiting to go on, who have volunteered. How big a problem is the shortage? Do you need bodies?
Actually, you know, that was one of the most surprising findings in the report. All of the other shortages, you know, we could attribute to lack of funding and food coming in from the government sources. But you're right, there has been a drop in the number of volunteers, particularly at soup kitchens. It went from the mid-20s range per day to now down to sort of 15, 16 per day. And yes, volunteers at soup kitchens would be enormously beneficial, you know, especially around the holiday season, of course, but throughout the year, because the numbers are showing up year-round, and we do need that help. And, of course, you know, I mean, the other piece is that, and New Yorkers keep asking us this question, does it help to give donations at this time? And, of course, while we're holding out for a big solution with the Farm Bill, walking into the holiday season with the shortage of food that we have right now is alarming, and we're very concerned about it. So, yes, in the short term, there's a lot New Yorkers can do to help, but in the long term, we do need that strong nutrition title in the Farm Bill.
How can people best donate? Should they donate food? Should they donate money? Should they donate to a local facility in their neighborhood? Should they donate through you as a central service?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that we try to do is make it easy for people. So there's no one way of doing it. And if people go to our website, they can sort of check out the different ways that they can engage with the issue. And it is foodbanknyc.org. But, you know, somebody can give to a local soup kitchen or food pantry if that's the easiest and best way for them. If they would prefer to do something like a virtual food drive so that they don't actually have to work with the food, or they want to do cash donations to either a local program or to the food bank, whatever way suits them, they're able to do that, and they can get information about it on the website.
And we did put a link on our website, so if you want to go through WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you can get where you need to go. Jordan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jordan.
How you doing? Good morning, everyone. I'm just a little embarrassed about calling, but my point is that I agree. I make about over $45,000 a year, but with the New York rent and my car and everything, I find myself relying on some of that food also. And that's just, like, I guess, key in just finding out what are we going to do about all the raising prices. And
do you have kids?
Yes, I have a daughter.
So, Anya, are you? He said he's a little embarrassed. Do you get people making $45,000 with one child coming into you, and would that make you raise your eyebrows or look askance?
Actually, that would be a typical scenario, and, you know, of course there's nothing to feel embarrassed about, but I can completely understand somebody not wanting to be in a situation where they need charity food. And the point is a very good one, because what we're seeing is that 79% of the people who come to the programs, that's 79% of the 1.3 million, are actually living in rented accommodation. And they're just having a hard time making ends meet because the vast majority of them are paying almost 60% of their annual incomes on rent. Now, you can imagine, anybody can do the math. If you're paying 60% of your income on rent, there isn't much left over then for other basic costs like utilities and food.
Jordan, do you know the percentage of your income that you pay on rent?
It's about maybe 70%.
70%.
Yeah, and it's because of the area I live in, and then if I moved and sort of cut that down, I might be sacrificing.
Yeah, you live in Park Slope. Would you consider cheaper digs?
Yeah, I would, but it's been hard. The familiarity is set in, and I'm working toward that. But even with that, I just wanted to say I understand that at the poverty line where they're making it now, I think that it should be higher just so other people can get services. I really think that the poverty line is set too high.
Thank you very much, Jordan. And Amy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I think somebody answered one of my questions about which jobs aren't full-time jobs aren't paying enough. But
great, because you called to say New York has a living wage law, which doesn't really have a living wage. It has a relatively high minimum wage.
Yeah. I think the living wage law only applies to contractors.
With the city, that's correct.
Yeah. But I'm wondering if maybe if there's more publicity that some of these jobs that the person mentioned are not paying enough, maybe there could be pressure on employers.
Yes, shame is a powerful tool. Ned in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ned.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for covering this. This is a really important topic. I've been volunteering for about 7 or 8 years at the St. Michael's Soup Kitchen on the Upper West Side, and I've noticed a huge shift in the number of people who've been coming. When I started, we would serve routinely about 70 or 80 people a week. We're open only on Saturdays, one day a week. Now we're serving well over 200. And I'm noticing a shift in the demographics. And when I started, the people we served were almost entirely upper middle age and some elders. Now they're still here, and there's also a lot of families with young kids who are coming in.
This is what you're seeing, too, on you, right?
Right. In fact, since 2004, the date of the last report, there's been an increase of over 100,000 children whose families are now coming to soup kitchens and food pantries. So we're definitely seeing an increase in the number of working families.
Thank you, Ned. We're almost out of time. The current farm bill, and this is how I want to end, because it sounds like this is where some of the solution is, at least for the patch that's needed over the winter. This farm bill expires at the end of the month, and the House has passed a version that increases emergency food aid, and the Senate is due to take it up tomorrow. So this is the politics of the moment, isn't it?
Right, and, you know, we're hoping for early resolution. We want to see it go to conference and a farm bill, authorized before the end of the calendar year, because the big fear, of course, is that if it gets delayed much further, we could be looking at a postponement until after the presidential election, which would really leave such a dearth of food in the system that we would be looking at a catastrophic situation here in New York City and around the country. And the other piece, of course, is that the Farm Bill is our first opportunity in 5 years to really strengthen the food stamp program, and there is a huge need to do that at this point.
Before you go, how long have you been at this?
Well, I've been at the food bank about 3 years, but I've been doing nonprofit work and sort of circling around these issues now for quite a while, probably about 10 or 15 years.
Isn't it amazing that in the same city where people pay hundreds of dollars for the perfect handbag, as we were hearing on the show earlier, that this exists to this degree?
Oh, well, you know, it's sometimes you walk down the streets of New York and you can't believe that the extremes of poverty and wealth exist here. I think it's funny that the earlier caller, He said he lived in Park Slope. I live in Park Slope, and I've seen that neighborhood change dramatically in the few years that I've been living there. And I think it's quite sad, actually, that our answer to the gentrification is that the poorest of people are expected to move out, are expected to go to other areas, even when they have kids and even when moving is considered to be one of the most stressful things a family can do. It would be nice to see a city where we could all live side by side and where there are enough resources for everybody in every neighborhood.
Anya Duggan, Vice President of Government Relations, Policy and Research at the Food Bank for New York City. We'll see what happens in Congress over these next few days as they have documented an increasing shortfall in the amount of food available in food banks in the city. You can get to their website through our website at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or go to foodbanknyc.org. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, the ethics of becoming a father in your 60s. And what to do when you get a noose on your door or a swastika on your wall. Stay tuned.